Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the coolest hour on internet radio. It's scary. No, it's not scary, Cassidy. My goodness, it's murder 123. I know, you're laughing at me. I got my crew from ScaryCast anyway, so that's fine. Anyway, it's so good to have you both here. First of all, we want to say hello to our lady for the evening, who keeps us straight and honest and everything, Robin McCray. How are you doing, Robin?
I am doing great, and I am excited about our topic tonight.
Wow, I am too. It's really, really interesting, and I'm glad to have you are the right people to be here, I'll tell you that. So thanks for being here and hanging out with us and all that. Now, Tony Filosi from up in the cold, and Tony, I'm psychic enough to know it's freezing up there, isn't it?
It's very cold. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm looking forward to The Legend of the Lizard Man.
Well, this is not exactly the legend that everybody thinks it's going to be. So here's what happened. I've been working on the new updated and revised version of my Lizard Man book. It's got a new title called Lizard Man 101. And what I will do is I will stay up all night long if I'm doing some academic work and trying to put together the new things that have come out since the last edition, which was about a year ago. A lot has happened. And believe it or not, I found some articles about a very terrible incident that happened on Interstate 20 outside of Camden, South Carolina. So I'm working on that. And then I find an article in Smithsonian Magazine. Found that today, which talks about the Lizard Man Festival. And then with all the research that I've been doing, this Murder 123 just came right together. We're putting together two things that are disjoint and find that they are very, very, they have a lot of commonality to them. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about it. And this article in Smithsonian Magazine, it was written by my buddy, Dr. Joseph Laycock from Texas State University. Nice guy. He and his wife came to the first Lizard Man Festival 2018. We talked at length during the Lizard Man Music Festival. While the Cryptid Creature was playing, we were talking. So it was just a lot of fun. What I'd like to do is I put the article from Dr. Laycock online, and we have asked Tony Filosi if he would please read the salient parts that are a brief history of Lizard Man and that famous sighting. So, to begin with, I'm going to turn it right over to our paranormal investigator at large, Tony Filosi. Take it away, Tony.
All right. Well, obviously, the title of the article is Legend of Lizard Man. Cryptid researcher Lyle Blackburn probably gives the best account of the Lizard Man saga in his book, Lizard Man, The True Story of the Bishopville Monster. In July 1988, the Lee County Sheriff's Office received a call from a resident in a small community called Browntown, complaining that their car had been mauled overnight apparently by an animal. When Sheriff Liston Truesdale began interviewing Browntown residents, several described seeing a 7-foot-tall creature with red eyes, what someone eventually referred to as the Lizard Man. Truesdale put the word out that if anyone knew anything about the damaged car or the strange creature, that they should contact him. On July 16th, resident Tommy Davis brought his 17-year-old son, Chris, to the sheriff's office. Chris Davis explained that when he was heading home from his night shift at McDonald's, he took a shortcut down a rural road and got a flat tire. After he finished changing it, he saw a 7-foot-tall green creature with 3 fingers on each hand and red eyes. When Davis tried to drive away, it leaped onto the roof of his 76 Celica. By swerving back and forth, Davis dislodged it and escaped. Truesdale, who had, after all, asked the community for information about the strange creature, believed Davis was telling the truth. Chris even took a polygraph test and passed. The author on the road where Chris Davis claims he had his encounter with the Lizard Man, Joseph P. Laycock, after Davis' story went public, more sightings were reported, some plausible, some clearly fabrications. Soon, armed parties were flowing along the swamp. The media descended on Bishopville. Locals began selling Lizard Band T-shirts and other merchandise. Sheriff Truesdale was interviewed by Good Morning America and CBS's Dan Rather. A newspaper as far away as South Korea ran Lizard Band headlines. To this day, the mystery hasn't been solved. The alleged sightings as recently as with alleged sightings as recently as 2015. But the chain of events, a strange sighting, media attention, more sightings, followed by visits from curious tourists and monster hunters, have played out in towns across the country from Point Pleasant to Roswell, New Mexico.
Okay. That's what Dr. Joseph P. Laycock says. And now I want to bridge his story with some commentary, some incorrect commentary from some skeptics. These are the skeptics that make a living at it. They have a Patreon account. They have a monthly podcast. And they just say about anything they want without any proof. What is interesting about these skeptics is they give details, and then they change the details, and then they go back to the original details, and then they change the details again. And so what I'm doing in my book, I'm going to actually analyze the podcast that I found this on, and I'm going to tell everybody where the inconsistencies are. Because now, Robin, I will ask you a question. If you're a skeptic and you're out there reporting this for all the world to hear, don't you think you ought to get your facts right?
Well, it would be nice, but you would be amazed, especially when it comes to cryptids, paranormal, anything, UFOs, ETs, whatever, anything of that nature. Because it is harder to prove because it's not scientifically proven. People just go half-baked with anything. And they seem to check. It's just amazing to me. It's like, yeah, I'm involved in all of these areas. But, and John, you know this about me. I've got pictures and facts to back it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
I have a picture of lizard. I have a picture of a lizard man at the back of my yard. I showed it to you.
Yep. I have a picture of a lizard man in the Savannah River. They're there. And so now I'm going to read that was kind of the scary cast part of our show tonight. But now we're going to go to the murder 1-2-3 part. And that's what's interesting. Now, one thing that the skeptics complained about was that, the car wasn't really damaged. And his story, Christopher Davis's story, he was about 18 at that time. He was from a poor family. He had a job at McDonald's. He had a broken down Toyota Celica. I mean, from what I understand, he was a fairly nice kid because I spoke to his cousin. She didn't want to talk to me, but she felt like she should. And I said, what really happened? Because, first of all, what happened to the car? Because everybody wants to know where are the pictures of the car.
Exactly.
Where the car go? But let me tell you what really happened. Christopher's father was very embarrassed about this whole thing. And he undoubtedly told Chris to stop going all wild with the story and telling it the way it was. So Chris changed his story to, I escaped with barely a scratch. When I can tell you, I have a friend in Florence named Robbie Howell, and he worked for a local newspaper in Florence. They said, go over to Bishopville, get that story. So Robbie goes over there, and he wants to take pictures of the car, and Chris won't let him. And then he starts talking to Chris. And apparently, as he looked at the car, he said, John, the car was mauled. He said there were deep gashes and gouges in it. And I mean, he says it's hard to tell that the guy could have even driven it. He saw it just right after it happened. And Sheriff Truesdale. Now, this is what's interesting. And I'm going to go ahead and spill some beans. Hey, Tony and Robin, can I spill some beans?
Absolutely.
Are you ready? Are you ready with the mop?
I am dipping with it. Because
I'm spilling. Okay. So when I go over there, so that everybody knows, this is the first time I've told this story. So it's an exclusive murder 1-2-3. Over there, I talked to the lady at the chamber. I said, let's have a Lizard Man festival. You know what she says? I love the Lizard Man. Let's do it. And I said, well, do you have any other festivals? She said, well, the Cotton Festival. It's rained the last two times. I said, third time's a charm. We're going to have a Lizard Man Festival, and it's going to be a blast. And she was all excited about it. So she takes me over to the county archives in the same building as the chamber. And she introduces me to some nice lady, and Deanna tells her that John's going to do a Lizard Man Festival. He'll want to do some research. And the lady said, oh, let me show you what I've got. So she takes me back, and there are several folders. And so she opens one up, and she shows me some kids' drawings from the school about Lizard Man. She shows me a greeting card a boy wrote to his girlfriend, and he drew a Lizard Man. It was nice. She said, well, just let me know, and if it's on the weekend, and she said, well, Deanna, you just live right around the block. She said, I can let him in. I've got a key. If he wants to do it on the weekend, that's great. So all well and good. Then my next stop was the Lee County Public Library. I go in there, tell her what I'm doing. The lady's all excited. You know, she says, I love Lizard Man. I said, I'm beginning to love Lizard Man, too. I think it's great. She said, I've got a couple of folders. Come on and let me show them to you. So she showed me a couple of folders with some articles, this, that, and the other thing about Lizard Man. I said, look, I'll get up with you when time comes because I'll want to do some exploration, you know, to try to really fill in some things. I said, has anyone ever done that? She said, not since I've been here. No one's ever asked about these articles and everything. So I said, that's great. So about 2 months later, I carved out a day. And I got there fairly about 10 o'clock in the morning. First thing I did, Miss Deanna was not in the chamber office. She was out doing something, being a chamber executive. So I go to the archives, you know, just right around the corner in that building. And I said, I wanted to take a look and start going through some of those folders. She said, we don't have them. I said, really? But you showed them. Did I? I don't think I did. I said, okay, I knew what that one was. So then, where did I go next? I went to the library. Then I went to the head librarian, and we had a nice session and talked about the upcoming Lizard Man Festival. I said, I wanted to go through those folders today. She said, well, we lost them. I said, oh, so you lost them in 2 months? I said, I'll take you where they were. Well, they're not there. So I go over there where they were, and thing was empty. And she said, well, somebody must have taken them. And I said, undoubtedly. Okay? So, it became apparent that nobody wanted to tell me anything about Lizard Man. So what happened is I was up at Horror Hound in Indianapolis. And my buddy Lyle Blackburn was there. Now, Lyle is important to this story because he was the first person. He went to Bishopville, and he took 2 weeks of his life to research and interview everybody on the Lizard Man. And he published a book called Lizard Man, The True Story of the Bishopville Monster. And a majority of his narrative came from the police reports who were at the home of retired sheriff Liston Truesdale. They should never have been there, but, you know, in a small town, retired sheriff, no one was going to say a word to him because he is above the law. He was a good man. He was a former FBI agent. He was well-trained, and he was above reproach. I don't think Liston Truesdale had a great reputation in that town. So Lyle said, well, you know, John, what nobody really knows about this thing is that I scanned and copied almost every document that he had. I said, oh, great. He said, I've got them if you ever need them. And he said, pay the FedEx, and I'll copy them myself. What a good guy. He's such a good guy. So I felt better that at least the documents procured by Liston Truesdale were still around. And so I looked at Lyle. And Tony, you may have seen this, but Robin, you've seen it. When I looked straight in the eye, and I looked at Lyle, and I said, is the story true? And his answer was, well, all those documents scared me. I said, okay, that's all I wanted to know. You know, and Lyle would have said, he could have said something else. You know, and Lyle's a pretty honorable guy. Now, I don't have any stories of him ever telling a falsehood. about his investigation. He's a good reporter. He's a good investigator. And so I know that the man that has copies of most of those documents, he has them, and he believes that they're real. So I don't care what these debunkers say. They can say whatever they want. But number one, if they can't get their facts straight, and number two, if I can catch them, and you know, all I've done, I haven't done that much. You know, I've done probably maybe 100 hours worth of research on lizard man. I mean, you know, if I can figure out that they're telling things that aren't true, well, then it's going to be fairly straightforward to debunk them. So what I can say is the story I just told you is true. All the information on lizard man vanished and appeared. And nobody thought a thing about saying, it's gone, or I didn't show it to you, when I know you did. So anyway, it was kind of frightening. I've never been around anything like, I mean, I felt like I was in a government cover-up, and who knows, I might have been, because of what we're going to talk about next. Are you ready?
We're ready.
Yeah. Hold on to your hat. That's what my dad used to say. What I did was I did some research into this accident. And let me tell you about the accident. There were these two boys from Mooresville, South Carolina. That's truly the racing capital of the world. I think every racing team in America has a shop there. It is about 30 miles north of Charlotte. Wonderful town. The people are so nice. I used to work there. So here's the story. This is our dossier, and this is actually a chapter in the new Lizard Man 101 book that's coming out in 3 weeks. So I guess we better get going on this book. These two boys from Mooresville, North Carolina, were reported missing by their parents on October 14th, 2012. Okay? Investigators found out that the boys left the party the late night on the 13th or early morning on the 14th. It was actually early morning, about 1:30 in the morning. And they told their friends that they were going to drive to Myrtle Beach and watch the sun come up. They've been drinking beer all night. I mean, back in 2012, it was probably easier to show a fake ID and get a 24-pack of any kind of beer you wanted than it is today. It really was. So they told them they were going to the beach. And in fact, they even texted their friends when they were just north of Columbia. They said, well, we're close to Myrtle Beach. Now, if you're a drunk 17 or 18-year-old, you probably might mistake Columbia for Myrtle Beach if you're drunk and it's late at night. You might just do it. But that's neither here nor there. So what happened is they kept on going. And the next day, about noon, their parents hadn't heard from them. They got very worried, so they called state police. And this is a wonderful thing the state police can do. They said, we have a way to contact all of the motels in Myrtle Beach and find out if they checked in under their name. And they said, well, now, did they have a fake ID? And dad said no. The other dad said no. So what they did was they mysteriously and magically contacted all the hotels and said, did the following two boys check in last night, maybe, you know, close to sunup? And the answer was no. In Myrtle Beach, North Myrtle Beach, Merle's Inlet, and Pauly's Island, the answer was no. So everybody got very concerned, and a statewide manhunt ensued. Now, when I say statewide, that's a little bit of a misnomer, because they hunted because in case you're familiar, they were at a party in Lake Norman at their friend's. So they would have taken Interstate 77 down to Columbia, South Carolina. They would have made a left. They would have gone then due east on Interstate 20. And Interstate 20 goes from Columbia. It passes Camden, Bishopville, and it ends in Florence, South Carolina. Then they would have easily jumped on Highway 501. It's called the Myrtle Beach Highway, exit 170, and it takes you directly to Myrtle Beach. And that's the way they would have gone. There really is no other way that you would want to go. There's a back road that takes you down Highway 74 and down through Bennettsville, and it's scary and dark, and nobody in their right mind is going to take that late at night. These boys may have had some beer, but they would not be prone to taking that obscure route, number one. And number two, the text message came from a tower, a cell tower in Fairfield, north of Columbia, between two exits. So they were pretty sure that they went down 77 and shot over from Columbia to Florence. So there they are. And they do, it takes them about 10 days to manually walk down. The search team walked down the interstate, starting at about Fairfield, got to Columbia, walked to Florence, that's 90 miles, and then they walked to Myrtle Beach, couldn't find it. So the next day, somebody had a bright idea. And of course, it was a policeman, and policemen are known to have bright ideas sometimes. And they said, they're in the water. And everybody on the team agreed this happened. They had run off the road. They were in the water. So what they did, and it was a kind of a smart move, I think, they started in Columbia because there's not a lot of water between Columbia and Charlotte. And it was real funny. I was telling this story to my buddy Eli Watson. He runs Cryptid Campfire. It's a podcast. Robin, you were on Scarycast when we had him. He's a nice guy. And I said, Eli, do you ever have these instances on the internet where there are lakes or creeks underneath it? And he said, John, this is California. We don't have any creeks and lakes. We got the Pacific Ocean. I said, oh, okay, I'm sorry. But he certainly understood, it was funny. He certainly understood, what I was trying to explain to him. So they started in Columbia, and they walked. They walked, and the first place that they found any substantive water right next to Interstate 20 was at mile marker 96. That is between Lugoff and Camden on Interstate 20. So they had a hard time getting down between the two bridges because for those of you not in South Carolina, when we have a bridge and it carries an interstate, we actually have two bridges, one for the left side and one for the right side, and then there is an empty space of about 10 feet between them usually. And what our state has done, like a lot of other states, is they put poles that are about 2 to 2.5 feet tall to keep cars that would get derailed off the interstate, to really put something up to keep them from running down into those embankments and going into creeks and lakes, which is a very, very smart thing. But they decided they'd go down and hunt the first one. So they're walking down the embankment, and one of those accidentally kicks and was covered up by some brush, and it was a bumper. And they looked at the license plate on the bumper, and unfortunately, it was the license plate of the car that these two boys were found in. So they go on down to Buck Creek. They have some poles with them. They start poking around, and all of a sudden, they reach something. It's about 6 feet under. It feels like a metal surface. And so they called divers in who were very close. The divers got in, went down there, and said, there is a car submerged on its roof. It is turned over. So they call, all the ammo necessary. They call a crane. They call everything. And they pull this car out of the water. It was upside down. And unfortunately, it had the bodies of the two boys. They had drowned. And so the story is the coroner took the bodies, determined that they had died of drowning, asphyxiation. Case was closed within 2 days. Now, let me tell you what I found out. And this is not so good. First of all, one of the officers said, well, the car must have been going so fast when they pulled off the road that, and these are his very words in the newspaper article, it must have launched into the water. It cleared a fence, which were those poles, and then it went into, it cleared some small trees. and then it went into the water. So what they're asking us to believe is that, the first of all, there were no tire tracks at all, except where they pulled off the road about maybe 70, 80 feet before the bridge. And so what happens, he said, well, it must have launched over those, over the trees, and then when it's in the air, it's obviously about 10 feet above the ground, and the bumper falls off. And then the car flips over, Tony, Mr. Law Enforcement. Hmm. So the car has gone so fast, I mean, it must be like Superman. So the car flips over magically and then carefully and gently descends into Buck Creek upside down because the roof of the car was not flattened and the boys were in there. Now, I'm going to ask Tony first and then Robin. Now, Tony, do you believe what we're supposed to believe?
I find it hard to believe the car crashed. Right. Yeah, I find that hard to believe. A couple other questions I would have would be, the first one would be, are there any caves in that part of South Carolina?
Now, why would you ask that?
Reptilians. I mean, if you got a lizard man, you're going to have a there's many, many sightings of reptilians, and there's really a lot of Native American lore about reptilians also.
Okay, that's a great point. All right. So now, what do you think about the car somehow magically dropping its bumper in midair and flipping over and then landing quietly and softly? What do you think about that? Robin, you better get ready. I'm going to ask you these questions too. What do you think, Tony?
I just don't see it. I don't see it happening. If there's no impact marks where they're supposed to went over, how do they explain it? I mean, what was the words they used? They had to launch them. You know,
yes,
I mean, if they hit it that hard and fast. But there would have to be some sort of marks there.
Yeah,
you know,
and
were
there
any skid marks? Skid marks.
Because had there been, just the highway patrol in their normal daily activities would have seen them.
Well, spotted.
Okay. Yeah, they would have. They'd have seen something, and going over those two and a half foot tall round lead or metal pipes. Don't you think? Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you launch a car over those without a cannon?
Right, with no marks. Now, my second question would be, who towed the car in? What tow service was used?
So I'm going to write that question down because I'm going there tomorrow. What tow service took the car, and where did it go? Because I can tell you, they closed that case so fast, it would have been like someone slamming a door in your face. 3 days and it was gone.
Right, but if you can talk to, find out who the tow service was and where it went to, you very possibly might luck up and be able to talk to the driver, track him down. And asking, was there anything unusual? Were there any marks on the car? Where is the car now? Is it in some scrapyard somewhere?
Tony, we have pictures of the car.
Are there marks on it, like scratch marks, claw marks?
No.
Anything?
No. There's not the what impressed me about the car is the roof of the car is perfect. The tires are perfect. Nothing happened to that car.
I still would want to interview the tow truck driver. The local police force usually has two or three towing services that they use, or it, by chance it may have been mentioned in the article, you know, Joe Bob's towing was used, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's a long shot. But usually the police service has two or three towing services they use, and they alternate them out. I know that's how they do it locally here.
You guys there? You got quiet.
Hello, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, good. It went completely quiet. Yeah, and you know, the thing of it is, with if this car is still, you know, no scratches or whatever, I want to see the tires. If
right.
This thing is that this car was skidding across with such force it flipped them, you're going to be able to tell that on these tires. And then the other thing is, John was talking about there were tracks from the tires on there. Well, did the track, I want to know how far these tracks went, or did it show where they stopped on the side of the road? I mean, yeah, there might be tire tracks, but does it show tire tracks going up to that embankment and then all of a sudden just disappearing? Does it have it where they pulled off the side of the road and stopped? I mean, it makes a big difference.
Right, right. And then, you know, if you hit the embankment that hard, like you said, when you look at the tires, there could be damage. It should have blown one or both of the tires, front tires out, and then it should have damaged the rims. You hit that hard,
exactly.
You're gonna, to launch a car, you're probably going to have damage to the rims.
Well, and I want to know who all came out after and looked at the crash scene, because were there tracks? Were there three-toed tracks anywhere? What kind of tracks
Good.
Did they find?
Yeah.
Because my guess is that none of them was reported. But then if you kind of back up for a minute, and I have already experienced this myself, and it happened to a large amount of people in Bigfoot research field. I mean, just huge amount. People that have deal with the dogmen, whatever. It's all across the board with these cryptids. Things will happen, and you have evidence, or you have witnesses or whatever. And next thing you know, the men in black show up. People get threatened, their lives get threatened, their family gets threatened, samples disappear, paperwork disappears, and then all of a sudden it's all gone.
That happened
now,
several years ago. That happened several years ago close to here in a little place called La Follette, Tennessee, exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and the thing of it is when Dr. Melba Ketchum did the study, the Sasquatch Genome Project, for anybody wanting to see it, you can go to SasquatchGenomeProject.org, and the paper and all the findings will be there for you. But there were governments that were threatening people. They were threatening people with samples. Everybody, you know, this is a commonplace. And I guess my thing is when you go to look for this evidence, okay, now we're going to, we know it's not the way they claim it is, so I'm going to give them that doubt for a second and say, okay, it really was two kids got drunk and they were going too fast and this is what happened. If that's the case, there would be no reason to hide the information. There would be no reason to misplace the file or close this case quicker than it should have been. When they start hiding, when files disappear, number one, I don't know why. Oh, why the government thinks that everybody's just too stupid to figure this out, but it's like a giant neon flag that says we really are onto something. Something paranormal happened, and it's a cover up because that's exactly what it is. And people in the research field, whether they've had evidence of a lizard man or a dog man or a Bigfoot or whatever, repeatedly have their homes broken into either by a government agent. What, or someone that claims to be law enforcement, and these samples are confiscated. Any paper trail, anything that would even come close to, you know, saying this could be something of a cryptid nature is gone.
Right.
And these people's lives, their families, their livelihood, everything is threatened, and they're terrified to speak. And so everybody just goes quiet, and they close up that case quicker than it should be, which, like I said, is the beginning of the red flag. And I honestly think that that's what has happened in this case. Now, you can say, because they're teenage boys, they're out playing and partying. I had 9 kids. I get it. Okay? I had my 9 children, and I had other people's kids that came and stayed with me whenever they would have problems with their parents. One came for 2 or 3 years. But so I get how kids can be. They all think they're big and bad. I mean, you know, they're not really an adult. They're not really a kid. So they just think they're, like, invincible. So I get
right.
it. But even if you give it and say these boys were out drinking, they were, you know, acting crazy or whatever, something still happened to them. Now, it's perfectly feasible for these kids if they were drinking, to have a high speed and go and flip it and go in the water. However, the situation on this, it doesn't fit.
Well, that brings out another point. I would like to see the autopsy reports and see how much alcohol was in their
system.
That's
what I was going to say, because we don't have proof that they even were drinking, or if they did drink, how much they drank. That is an assumption
right.
that's been put in the public's mind
yes.
as a plausible
yes.
explanation.
Right.
You know,
I
we
want
come
to see
to
the blood alcohol levels.
Yeah, we come to conclusions based on what information we're fed. And we really need
yes.
to get away from that. I think that's one of the really good things about this show is we don't go by what other people want us to believe. We go by the truth. We go by things in the series of events, and we go from there. And we keep digging and digging, and we look in areas that other places don't. But again and again, we find that people, through the course of time, believe possibly in an incorrect method of their death because they go by the information that they were given. Well, that's just information that people want you to believe. That doesn't mean it's the truth.
Exactly. Exactly.
And
how far is it? How far is this town from Myrtle Beach?
That I'm not really yeah. sure. I've only been out in South Carolina about 18 months, so and I'm still learning my way around here.
Right. But my point is that if it, you know, why would you cover it up? You know, but if you're close to a tourist destination where the town's depend on tourism, you know, for their life's blood, then you're not really going to say that there's a 7-foot-tall beast that could pick up your car
absolutely.
And toss it, you know, in the river.
Exactly. But then you go one step further. And this isn't just in our country, although our country is very bad about it. Other countries as well. So it's not just limited to the United States. But for hundreds of years, there has been a massive cover-up on any cryptids or paranormal activity. The government doesn't want us to know about it for a number of reasons that have nothing to do with what's going on tonight, but they don't want us to know about it, and they go to excessive lengths to keep it quiet. They do. And, you know, they don't want it out. So this happens, and you're not talking about these kids got drunk. You're talking about a 7-foot-tall lizard that, you know, other people have seen as well. I mean, not everybody reports it. That's the thing. And I found that myself when I moved to South Carolina. I'm thinking, boy, nobody here talks about Bigfoot. Well, was I wrong? You know, I warned my neighbor. I said, I'm here, so you better get ready for them because they're going to be in your yard. And, of course, now they are. She gets along with the clans out here very well. I told her how to handle it and everything, and she's doing great. But she's talked to other people. All of which are like, no, we don't tell anybody. And I get flooded with calls because now they have somebody to call and talk to about it. But it's like this with all the cryptids. So just because there isn't this huge databank of all these sightings of it, and even if there was, who's to say that that's not going to get shut down too? So,
right.
Okay.
You know, you can't
assume. Can I jump in? Because I've got some news for you. You ready?
Okay.
First of all, I'm going to said town tomorrow morning. And it is 2 hours and 15 minutes from here. And I've already verified that the accident report does not exist.
Right.
I just have verified that. No,
it,
sir,
it,
I
it
called.
It has to exist somewhere.
Oh, sure it does, but I mean, you know, and I sure didn't want to go probing around on the telephone and have him sitting there with my number and say, well, this dude,
no,
John,
but John
is, you know, I don't want to do that.
No, but you have to agree, especially, and you were into this cryptid stuff before you and I got friends, but, you know, even now, and again, you've dealt with this kind of thing for a long time as well. Any information on something of this nature, you and I both know, it's buried, it's destroyed, it's gone. And there's only one place those records are going to be, and it's going to be in a government file somewhere.
Well, here's an angle. While John's in town tomorrow, if he has access, you're going to the library, then maybe someone there can help you. I don't know whether it be through one of the genealogy sites or what, and you may have access to that at your home, is you already have these young men's names and the year they died, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So get their death certificates and then start backtracking from there. But
yeah.
Death
goodness, Tony, I hate to say this, but if they're there.
Well, the other thing is, if they're there, and they very well might be, but we have no way of knowing if the cause of death is accurate. Because we all know it can be altered.
Well, you see, what was interesting, and I got to tell you about this. This is what was very curious. It was painted in one of the newspaper articles that they may have been sidetracked and kidnapped. And the article started talking about how the times didn't match. Well, because I've lived in the Carolinas all my life, the times matched exactly. That ping that came from Fairfield County was at about the right time. If they'd been driving 70 miles an hour from Lake Norman down there, that would have been right on time. And they said, oh, it couldn't have been, and people will read it in the newspaper and they'll say whatever, and they won't think. And I'll tell you who the real victim is here are the parents of those two boys.
Absolutely.
You look at pictures of them, those boys were like the people you'd want your kids to hang out with. Yeah, they may have been a little bit wild, but they were good kids that you could just see in their eyes. And
yep.
So the real victims are the parents. And I feel so bad about them. I mean.
As far as to think that they were kidnapped or they were drunk or whatever. I mean, I just want to put this out there. Yes, I'm in all this paranormal stuff and all the cryptid stuff, but that doesn't mean that every single case I automatically don't consider the fact that it could have been a normal accident or something, if it was sinister, but it was in the normal world and not in the paranormal world. I think about all those too. When I look at this stuff, I'm not looking for a certain answer. I'm just looking for the answer. So not everything that I look at means it's paranormal. But
correct.
When it is, and it's slapping you in the face, I'm also a realist. And whether I think, it's a paranormal thing or not, the truth is the truth. And when you look at this, and I did, John, after you and I had talked, I thought a lot about this, and I did my own read on it, which you and I talked about, and I did, and I thought, okay, what about if somebody had abducted them? Okay, what human being that we know of our people, I'm not talking about the forest people or anything like that, our people, is strong enough to pick up a car, throw it over a guardrail and over trees? I mean,
right.
You know what I mean? Who else is strong enough to rip off a bumper? And the thing with the bumper coming off, was there anything in these guardrails or in these trees that would have indicated it had gotten hooked on something? And then
it was found on the ground. It was found on the ground.
Yeah,
and
I never heard where you had said that it showed that it had made contact with anything else to have knocked it off, where if that was the case, there would be debris, whether it be another car or the guardrail or whatever, there would be debris from whatever it hit to do that. Now, and John, I've shared this with you before, and I'm going to bring it up again just so people can hear the sheer strength of these things. Okay, now when you're talking about lizard man, whether it's lizard man, dog man, goat man, the pig man, cat people, Bigfoot, it's all in a certain realm of genetics with them. Okay, there's all a common connection in there. They all have got a strength that we can't even comprehend. Now, I had a very dear friend, and like I said, John, I've already told you this story, I haven't, Tony. I had a very dear friend that was out walking in the woods. He was out there looking for signs of a Bigfoot. He is walking, and he heard something kind of shadowing him. So, I mean, he could hear the footsteps. He kind of figured he wasn't alone, but he couldn't get him to make any contact. So he's walking through the woods, and he had walked quite a ways, and off to one side, somebody had abandoned a car out in the woods. It looked like it had been there for decades, but it was sitting there. So he continues on this walk, and he gets pr- probably 75 feet away from this car, and he hears what sounds like metal being ripped. Now, mind you, he already knew the foots were out there, and he knew that he had been being followed because he could hear them. He hears metal being ripped, and he's looking around going, I'm out here. There's nobody around for God knows how long. I'm deep in the woods. What is going on? And the next thing he knows, this bumper is thrown straight up in the air over the top of this massive tree and comes down and lands on the other side of him. I mean, that's what kind of power and strength we are dealing with, and that includes
okay,
Lizard Man.
Robin, I have to stop you there because last week I was in North Georgia at one of my favorite places in the North Georgia mountains. I'm standing there enjoying myself by myself on a one-lane dirt road, and all of a sudden I saw something about 4 feet long and 3 feet wide launch over a tree and come down and crash. Now, and what I said to you, I said, well, you know, even if you're about 12 feet tall and weigh about 1,800 pounds, you pick a different way to say hello other than walking up and saying, hey, how you doing? You know, so that
yeah.
was, I realized
and
that
depending
was a way
on
to say
what
hello.
They're throwing, yeah, depending on what they're throwing are different things. In my friend's case, it was, you have no business being here. I'm showing you just how strong I am, and now is your time to leave. And he paid attention to that. He walked out, and they followed him out, but no harm came to him. That's why they did that. If they wanted to hurt you, there's no place on this planet or any other planet that you could go that you'd be safe.
And, you know, they do it 50 feet. You know, they do it 50 feet away from you. That's a hello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know what I did? I waved, and that was it.
Let you know they were there.
Yeah. And I,
you know, it's much safer to do it that way. Yeah, it was much safer to do it that way than to walk out in front of you in case you were going to shoot them. You know, but the point is,
I would have a heart attack.
Exactly. But my point is this is the kind of sheer strength that we're talking about here. Now, the Lizard Man reports, and again, the one that came into my backyard, to begin with, I mean, to be clear, I didn't know he was back there when I got up. I mean, I walked outside, and I was just taking some pictures in my backyard. I live, you know, back in the woods, and it gets rather pretty. And I did not realize he was there. I wasn't looking for anything. You know, I mean, I was just taking some pictures. And generally, you know, once in a while, I'll get a Bigfoot that's back there, and they'll be in the picture as well. And I took it, and I came in, and I'm looking at this, and it was, like, literally the upper chest, shoulders, and head. And I was like, holy crap. Like, I didn't realize it was even out there. I was out in the backyard. He was not threatening to me. He didn't make any attempts to hurt me in any way, shape, or form. Now, that being said, there are countless reports of people that have encountered these things. And, you know, some can be aggressive, but there's also, they have a bad attitude. Like, I mean, they're not warm-blooded. They're not, you know, all lovey-dovey. They want what they want, and generally they just want to be left alone. You know, we're more of a nuisance than anything. But when you get people, and John and we talked about this once. We don't really know the synopsis of what happened with these boys. And I tend to wonder if they had been partying a little bit, even if they weren't completely intoxicated. And I know teenagers, like I said, I had 9 of my own. And they're cocky. Teenagers are cocky. I mean, let's be realistic. You know, and when you have of that nature, if they're frightened, that's one thing. But if they're not frightened and they're more curious, and they always think they're bigger than life, okay? Teenagers think they can take on the world and they're always going to win. They do not comprehend that they ever wouldn't. So we don't know what went on between them and the Lizard Man. And a Lizard Man does not tolerate bunk. I mean, nothing. They know what they're capable of, and they're not afraid to do it. And if these kids came on him, whether it ran across the road, whether, you know, whatever happened, they made contact. And you don't know if these kids were like, oh, my God, check out this thing. And they didn't really understand the gravity of its strength, of its paranormal abilities, of any of that. He could have zapped them and took care of those boys in a second. And the kids would have never known what hit them. You know, I think there was some type of an encounter, but there's just not enough evidence to back up what little bit, extremely little bit, has been said. And if you look at it, what little tiny bit was said, it doesn't really explain anything. And that's the other thing to me, is just a sign that there's something not right. It doesn't give clear-cut answers because they don't have them and they don't know what to say. So they kind of do what I call circle talk. They say a whole lot of nothing thinking they've covered it up and nobody knows what to say. And that's why they do it.
Well, here's what I will say. I want to make another comment. Is I know a lot of people in Camden, South Carolina, and I know who I can trust to tell me the truth. And I, when all this came about, I immediately went to a person who I consider a little bit of a friend, and I took that. I went to their work. I speak to you for a minute. I got a question for you. And sure, you know, so we step into another room, and I said, what happened with those boys? Do you remember them? She said, oh, yeah, we all remember it. She said it was Lizard Man. Boom. Right
wow.
in my lap. But here's the deal. But it's like, who do you go to? You don't go tell cops. I mean, you know, you don't get on you can get on Coast to Coast AM if you can get on there, or you can come on Scarycast, or you can come on Murder 123. But there's not a lot of people that you can say, oh, it was Lizard Man. Uh-oh. And, you know, people look at me sometimes. I'll never forget. I'm in Clayton, Georgia, where I run the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And I have good relations. I don't think anybody down there has anything bad to say about me much. They think I'm a little quirky and weird. But a fellow that runs a very popular restaurant said, you know, John, you can come in here and we have a great conversation and you sound like just a good businessman. Then all of a sudden you slip into what I call Bigfoot mode. And you sit there and talk about Bigfoot in the same tone that you talk about business, just very factual, whatever, you know, and then you'll go back to business. And I said, well, I guess you got to love me or hate me. He said, no problem. Keep coming in and getting omelets. But it's, you know, it's like, it's interesting. It's like, there's no, when you were in the third grade, you could go tell your teacher or you could go tell your mom or your dad. You can't tell, I mean, you can't, there's no one to tell this to, is there?
Well, the thing is even if you, even if you try to talk to your family or friends about it, I think at best, if they're people that love you and care about you, they're just like, oh, well, that's cool. But, you know, in the back of their mind, they're going, okay, their little choo-choo's gone around the bend. Now,
what do you think my brothers say about me? They love me, but they don't understand it.
But now, here's the thing. Years ago, we're talking years ago, way back, I did make the effort. And I did try to tell my family. And even when I was 4 years old and I was telling them about the Bigfoots and stuff, and my mom and dad, you know, were just kind of blowing it off. I was telling them all about the ETs, and you know, they just thought it was my imagination, and they blew it off. And as I got older, they were, you know, Robin, those things aren't real. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? Like, why do I know this stuff then? Because it wasn't, the books weren't out yet. You know, there was no books out for it. And so even my parents, I told them my whole life. Now my mother, and I love my mother dearly, she's come up with the perfect answer for it, and she devised this about 6-7 years ago, and she said, you know, you've talked about these things your whole life, and she said, I want you to know I've never not believed you. However, I will be honest with you and say I have no frame of reference for this. I don't understand it. I can't comprehend it. But what I do know to be true is you are not a liar. You would never make this stuff up. I've known you your whole life. That is not something you would even consider doing. And you have never changed your story. Instead, you know, stayed steadfast on all of these things. So I'm going to believe it because I believe in you. And I thought, you know what? That's a cool mom, you know, because most family members do not do that. But you can't just go to anybody and tell them because they'll think you're batshit crazy.
Well, I can tell you that my parents, by the way, and I say, do not speak ill of the dead. They can hear you. My parents were great. They were about the best parents I could have ever had. But when I told them things that I saw, I could tell they just didn't know how to process it. They
yeah,
were good
and my
people.
Mom and my dad especially was like that.
My dad was a World War II veteran. My mom was probably one of the nicest people that ever walked the streets of Morganton, North Carolina. But they just were not prepared for this. And my mother looked at me one time when she came, you know, they came down at one weekend to visit me when I was in graduate school. And she got me in the guest bedroom. She closed the door. She said, "Did I do anything wrong? I mean, you say things like this, and it upsets your father. He doesn't know what to say." I said, "Well, then I'm not going to say anything about it around him because I don't want to make him uncomfortable." And she was uncomfortable. She said, "Did we do something wrong?" I said, "No." I said, "You know, I just some things are different." And she didn't like that remark. But, you know, it's like, what can you say? I said, "Something's different." And, I mean, you know, I said, "Well, at least I'll tell you what's going on." She said, "Yeah, that's good." Because she found a briefcase. I got to say, she found a briefcase that I had. And it had all kinds of paranormal stuff in it. I mean, I don't know if she expected money or guns or something. It was paranormal stuff. It was Loch Ness Monster. It was all kinds of stuff. And you know what? I guess if I was the kind, gentle lady that was my mother, I would be concerned. I wouldn't know what to say. You know, Robin, I mean, Tony, Robin, you wouldn't know what to say either. If you were married to a World War II vet and one of the nicest people in the world. I mean, you know, gosh.
Yeah. Well, you know, with my mom, what finally, she had always been on that fence where she would believe me when I talked to her about it because, like I said, she believed me. The subject on its own confused her. She said, "I can't say it's not true because it's just something I know absolutely nothing about, and it's so hard for me to swallow, but obviously there's something there." Well, she came to visit me one time, and she only lived about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from me, and she came down for the weekend. And she stayed, and the first night, she came and got me. And she said, "You realize there's something pounding on your house?" And I said, "Mom, it's fine. Just go to bed." She said, "No, I'm serious. It's been pounding for the last half hour." And one of the kids hollered from their bedroom and said, "Yeah, Mom, they need you. They want you outside because they're not going to stop till you go outside." Well, it was common knowledge at my house that every night around 2 a.m., the foots would bang on the house until I walked outside into the yard. And I would go out there, and I'd either sit, and they'd be walking all around, or, you know, I'd go out there and talk to them or whatever, and they'd still be walking in circles around me. And so the kids knew it. And if they got too persistent and I wasn't out there, the kids would come and wake me up and be like, "Mom, I've got to go to school the next day. Will you just go?" You know, because they're not going to stop. And my mom didn't realize this, but she came for the weekend, and she woke me up. She's like, "I don't know if somebody's breaking in or what, but it's just consistent. It will not stop." And I'm like, "I got it covered, Mom. Go to bed." So the next morning she gets up and she said, "How did you make it stop?" I said, "I went out and stood on the porch." All you had to do was crawl on the porch. And you could see him in the tree line and the eyes shine and everything. But it was so comical. And after that, and weird things would go on when she was there. And she said, "You know, as much as I love you and I want to be here to see you and the kids," she said, "I don't know. I want to stay here anymore." I said, "Well, for something you're not sure if it's real, you're worried?" She said, "Well, I always believed you." She said, "I never didn't believe you." She said, "I just couldn't wrap my head around it." But she said, the more I'm around the situation, there's definitely something there. And now she'll ask me how the foots are doing. I mean, she came to stay, not this past Christmas, but the Christmas before, she came to stay for 3 or 4 weeks. You know, Nicole, and Johnny, you've been in my house. You can't stay in my house.
I
can't
wait to meet her next year at Christmas. Heck yeah.
I know. Yeah. You'll love her. But, you know, so now she's used to it. I mean, I have conversations with her about them, and the ETs scare a little bit more than the foots do. But, you know, she'll ask about them. You know, I mean, it's got to be pretty funny. But, you know, most parents aren't that cool about it. And there really isn't a lot of places you can go with this kind of stuff unless you're talking to somebody that has experienced it themselves.
All right. Robin, I got to direct a question to Tony Filosi. Tony, are you still with us?
I'm still here. I am just, this is just interesting. This is very good stuff.
Well, I was just wondering if you were still with us. And I don't guess you knew that when you signed up to be a co-host of Murder 123, you didn't know it was going to be the paranormal version. I guess you didn't, did
no.
you?
No.
Welcome to Crazy Town, Tony.
That's okay. Crazy Town's one of my favorite places.
Why
well,
did I know, send you?
Listen, yeah. Yes, ma'am, Robin.
I'm going to send you my Lizard Man picture, Tony.
I'm sorry.
I just sent you my Lizard Man picture, so you can look at it.
Okay,
he's blended
great.
Into the bushes, but even John will tell you can find him. Like he's camouflaged in the bushes, but you will have no problem finding him.
I gotta say,
oh yeah, I see.
And Tony doesn't know this, but the first time that I came to Robin's house was at Lizard Man Festival last year. She was kind enough to invite me and one of the best friends I've got in the world, Papa Stroh. And, you know, Papa Stroh's about not afraid of anything. He's a great wrestler. He's a mixed martial artist champion. He's not afraid of anything. And so we go to Robin's house, and the first thing we do is we get this big old mess of Sloppy Joe's, so good. When I say big old mess, that's what we say in the mouth. It was a big old mess. It was great. And so then all of a sudden, I realized that I am in Bigfoot Central Station. And I get scared. And Rob laughs at me. He always, because he's like my roommate. He's my fraternity brother when we go to events. He stays with me, and we laugh, and we talk. People say, you get to room with him? I said, no, because unfortunately he's stuck with rooming with me. And he always laughs at that statement. But it's like, and he saw, I was petrified. Robin, you'll admit, I was petrified, right?
You were. You threatened never to come back.
That's right. And you know what's
but
funny?
I mean,
it's like, but it's interesting. It's like when I'm up in Clayton, Georgia. Up when I say I'm way up, you know what I mean when I say I'm way up in the North Georgia mountains. You know what way up in the mountains is, right? Because you live in Durham, and it's like I'm up there, and even when I tell my Bigfoot sighting stories, when I say way up in the North Georgia mountains, I can see people shudder. And I mean, it's like when you go and you know stuff is there, and then you start hearing things. And the most terrifying thing that I saw at Robin's house, it was 65, 70 degrees. It was a nice warm night, no wind. And all of a sudden, all the trees on the left-hand side of her yard start rumbling around like mad. And then I stuck my hand up. There's no wind. I said, okay, I think I'm going to go inside now and have a drink.
That female still hangs out over there. She's the one that has the little boy. And they hang in that clump of bushes that they were shaking. It was who was in there. Her son plays in there. He's got tunnels all through those bushes, and he climbs all the way up those 30-foot pine trees. He's the one that keeps tearing on all the big branches. And he does all these huge twists on them.
If you don't think that they're 30 feet tall, just come on. They're just right up there in the sky.
Oh, the big pine trees, yeah. Well, you're welcome anytime, Tony.
Well, Tony, here's what we need to do.
We'll bring all the equipment. That would be a great thing to.
You don't need
any. I hope you don't like your equipment because they fried my security cameras within a week after we got them. From the inside out, it was hysterical. They both went down at the same time. We had gotten pictures of portals opening and closing on the security cams, and then I have a short video, and it shows this one big, huge mass. It's actually a Bigfoot sitting on my porch, but then if you look right in front of the porch where the cars, there's two or three cars there, and you can see a tall, white, bipedal creature walking in between the cars. It's real fast. You got to really watch it. It's very, I mean, you can tell it's there. And we got that, and we got the portals, and I had already had a portal open up to begin with, but it wasn't in the direction the cameras were facing. And then we got two more. In fact, the one we had that opened up, there's a head of this creature coming out of the portal. But it was right after that, and we were oohing and on about these pictures, and we got some video of them walking around. And the next thing I know, they both shut down at the exact same time, and both of them, the insides got fried. We
wow.
didn't have them very long when they did it. We sent them back to the company, and the company replaced them. So we have no idea what went on and why in the world the two different cameras and two different – one was in front, one was in back, and they both had the same thing happen at the same time.
Well, and you know, I want to share a story with you, Tony, that I've told you about, Rob, and you know about it. Once I start telling, you're gonna start laughing. We ran the Cherokee Comic-Con up in Cherokee, North Carolina. It's a beautiful place. And I had everybody, all the stars were staying in the same hotel. I had Robin and Janice and the Walking Dead types, you know. I love them to death. So we're all staying at the Quality Inn in Cherokee. And so I am exhausted after Saturday, and I just wanted to go sit down in my room and order pizza out. So I ordered pizza, and Papa Stroh comes in. I said, "You want pizza?" So I ordered an extra pizza. And so we're in there and just sitting around talking. And I have my bank bag with me, and I call it Lizard Man because I have Lizard Man on. It's a decal, and I have it on there. And that's where I always keep my money, and that's why you'll always see me with a bank bag if I'm going to do an event. I can't keep cash. So we're sitting in there, and I'm pretty good. I always know where that is because without that, I can't run my events. So I always keep it right next to me, and I sat down on the bed, and I had it between me and the pillows, you know, and we're waiting, and so I pick it up, and I go for the pizzas, and I come back, and we ate way too much pizza, but it was good. And then I said, "Guys, y'all can keep talking all you want. I have got to get some sleep because I got to get up at 5 in the morning and go get donuts and everything for Bigfoot University." I just passed right out there in my clothes on the bed. Papa Stroh and another one of the folks he was staying with us. He didn't have a place to stay, so we got him a cot, and so he's talking to Papa Stroh. And I vaguely remember that about 2 in the morning, they quit talking. And so anyway, it was all quiet. So I wake up at 4. And so I get up, and I just didn't even take a shower. I just threw on clean clothes and never left the room. I look for my bank bag, and it was gone. And I said, "No, this can't be happening." So I'm looking for my bank bag, and then I woke up Stroh. And I woke up, this was a guy named Dylan. He's a caricature artist. And we scoured that room. I didn't know Dylan, but I trust Pop. If I'll room with someone on the road, I'll trust him with my life. And nobody could find anything. And so what I did, I think Pop was letting my dollars to go buy the coffee and the donuts and everything, the kind, good friend he is. So I go out and I leave, and I don't have my driver's license. And I drive to Silva, which is 20 miles away. I buy the stuff. I come back, and I'm scared to death because I don't have my wallet. And I had probably about $2,000 in it to pay the hotel rooms and everything. So, Tony, you know I was on high alert, right?
Absolutely.
So I get back, and so I said, "Guys, no." I said, "Well, I'm going on over there. I got to open everything up." So I go over there, and so we start Bigfoot University. And this is where it gets really weird. A nice young lady who was in Bigfoot University, she said, "I need to talk to you." I said, "Okay." So I finished my presentation. Then I stepped outside with her. I said, "Well, what's up?" She said, "My cousin got a call from her cousin at the desk of the Quality Inn, and they found something of yours." I said, "Is it my bank bag?" She said, "Yeah, it is." So I waited until I think I put either Janice Carter or Robin up there. And so I run over there, and the guy is still there. I said, "Did you find something of mine?" He said, "Yeah." And he handed me my bank bag. I said, "Where did you find this?" He said it was in the chair all the way across the room. I looked over there, and I saw this, like, dark I thought it was a shadow, and I didn't know what it was. I mean, this is like 100 feet away from the check-in desk, and I had never walked over there. And it was there with all the money. And who did I call? I called my friend Robin, and she first thing said, "They were just playing a joke on me." I said, "Well, for goodness sake,
humor is terrible."
I said, "Don't do that." I mean, I was petrified. You know, I'm up there. I got a $2,000 hotel room, bill to pay, and I don't have my bag, my money, my driver's license. I don't have anything. How am I going to even get home? I mean, I could have probably asked Robin or Pat or Hutt to lend me $50.
We got you, John.
I know, but it was just like, it was mortifying. That is the most frightened I've ever been, and it was. And you know what? Toward the end of the day, I kind of saw in my head, I saw one of them just smiling and laughing. It's like, Yeah, you're real. You're as real as you get. And I said, don't do anything to me like that again. I mean, if you want me to stay around and hang out and help, me with a heart attack is not going to do anybody any good. And that's what I thought. We haven't had that since. So anyway, I don't know if we're supposed to be talking about this on Murder 123, but everybody knows it's a paranormal and murder radio show. And now, listen, I got to. We've got to do what we've got to do. Robin,
yeah.
We count on you as our remote viewer. Can you take a minute and can you tell us what do you think about this murder story?
You and I had talked about this before and I did it. What I kept getting, you know, and whether it's the same as what the facts show, I don't know. But what I got was, they were going down, they were screwing around, you know, they're being teenagers. I mean, let's be realistic, they're being teenagers. They come down through there and they saw something. They couldn't explain what they saw. Whether, you know, it crossed the road or whatever, they saw it. It wasn't trying to be seen. They weren't looking for it. It just happened. They stopped. They got out because they were stunned. I mean, just like when people see a Bigfoot, half of them are so afraid they can't stop and get out of the car, but yet they stop anyway because they don't understand what they just saw. They can't comprehend it. And these guys were out messing around, and like typical teenagers, they're big and bad, and they can take on the world. And they saw this thing, and they stopped, and that was their first mistake. You know, if you leave them alone, they're not all of them, but a good portion of them will leave you alone too. But they didn't. They stopped the car, and I think they were curious about it, what it was, and it kept going. And they got out of the car trying to figure out what they had seen. And they went towards it. And that was the end of it. I mean, after that, it probably turned around, scared the living tar out of them. They booked it back into the car, and this thing approached the car. And I kept getting the same vision over and over again of it standing, you know, at the car, ripping that bumper off. In anger, like it was trying to be big and bad and show them, you know, this is me, that you're in my place now or whatever. And these kids were still alive at that point, and they're in the car and they're screaming bloody murder. And of course, all the screaming is doing is getting the lizard man more worked up. And then that was the end of it. You know, and it's unfortunate and it's incredibly sad because these kids didn't know what they were messing with. They had no idea. They were just being kids. It was the wrong place at the wrong time. I don't get that Lizard Man was seeking them out in any way, shape, or form, and I don't get that they were seeking him out. They just happened to be in the same place at the same time. And then when this happened,
wrong time.
I have no doubt in my mind that there were tracks. And I think when the police originally went out, they looked at it, they said, this makes absolutely no sense to me at all. How are we going to write this up? Because it makes actually no logical sense, and I think the government got brought in because of the tracks, and I think there was more physical evidence there that is yet to be determined, but I think that there was, and that's why the government got brought in, and the government did like what it does every single time that this goes on with the Dogman and the Bigfoot and the Goatman and all the other paranormal stuff and the ETs. They clean it up, and when they clean it up, there's nothing left. And they close the case up tight. They want it done. They want it over. And they want everybody moving on. And anybody that would have had anything or any knowledge, like the tow truck driver, the police officers that first responded, whatever, they're going to give them a bogus story to stick to. And they will threaten them. I've been on the receiving. They will threaten them. And they are either going to stick to this story or their families, their children, their livelihood, something will blow up if they fail to do what they're told. And then it covers it up and you get exactly what we have now, which is a case that was closed way too early, made no sense, and not given any real facts and all done in circle talk to confuse everybody so nobody really knows what the hell's going on.
Well, I mean, let's face it. You know, the parents wanted closure. And that's what they got.
And I don't blame them for that. And I'm sure as a parent, the last thing you want to think of is something like that coming after your kids.
Yeah, and I think really and truly, it was for the best. I mean, those parents have suffered greatly.
I don't like the idea that once again, the powers that be, whether it's government or whether it's the police, because I'm not going to say they're the only ones that have done it. There's other organizations that have come in and done these cover up as well. And it just infuriates me to no end. But I do agree with you that in this particular situation, for the parents' peace of mind, this was probably the best.
Yeah,
we had
and,
a situation where in Michigan, a girl was murdered, and she was really, she was torn limb from limb. And when I had heard about it, it didn't sit right with me. It just, it, they said it was a mass, you know, some murder running loose or whatever. But the details of how they found her, to me, seemed more Bigfoot than it did anything else. In the area that she was in, there are a few clans that are aggressive. And it's not that they hate people. It's that they're really, it's up in the far UP. They're away from people, and they're up there, and they hide out away from people for a reason. She went into their place, and this is what happened. But anyway, I did some digging. I connected with some things to find out what had happened, and I found out that that indeed was what had happened and that the one that had done it was already been dealt with and not coming back. But, you know, then I have a choice. Do I contact the police? Do I contact the family? And I didn't. And I had a very dear friend of mine get very angry with me and said, "That you're the responsibility that you have is to do this, and you need to call a press conference." And I'm like, "Oh, no, I'm not." Because most people will never believe it, and the families deserve closure. And they can't have closures when the world is thinking half the people are crazy and the other half are lying. And, you know, and then the concept of some being doing this to someone they love is more than they can handle. And I made the choice that even though I knew the information, it was going to stay with me. You know, the one that did it wasn't in a situation where he could do it again. And at the end of the day, that was the best I could do. You know, I mean, it's harder for the people that are still living than it is for the ones that have passed. And the parents and the families and the friends deserve some kind of peace. So you have to determine whether or not, is it worth it to prove that you're right? Because if the only way to prove that you're right is at somebody else's expense, then it's just not the right thing to do. And I think that, you know, has a lot to do with not only the situation I was dealt with, but also with this, with the lizard man, because that's more than those families could have handled.
Yeah, they don't need that. Tony, what do you think?
I think they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I would like to see some of the reports. And if it's at all possible, I would interview the tow truck driver, try to find, you know, what did you see? Did and then ask about tracks. I mean, nobody's gonna, obviously the police are not going to tell you. You
no,
know,
but
yeah,
I'm with Tony.
These.
I want to see those too because I don't believe that there were no tracks from anything there. I don't believe that
but
for
there
a second.
There has to be. Because when he flipped that, I mean, you know, he's going to be a big, he's going to leave tracks anyways, but whenever he puts, you know, lifts that car up or flips that car, then you know, you got all that weight, you know that it pushed him further into the soil.
Yeah, I want to see the car tracks, all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, There has to be a police, well, there has to be an accident report somewhere.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, I would go to the death certificates and print off any newspaper articles that I could find and then start any names in those newspaper articles I, you know, that had any relevance to it, I would start knocking on doors.
Well, we'll see how far I can get tomorrow morning. And I'll let everyone know.
Yeah,
well, I will. This is, you know, I say this is a very, you know, something we don't want to talk about much, but, you know, here we are with probably by the end of next week, a couple hundred people will have heard this. And I don't mind saying it today because I want to do it tomorrow. But we'll see what happens. And if I'm not back, Tony and Rob, I better give you guys the password so you can run the show next week. Because if I disappear,
exactly.
you guys may
he
have to run
me
it.
He's going to do it, Tony. But you know what? He just can't relinquish that control. I'm telling you. I'm sending all these passwords in case you ever have to do it. Never do I get them.
Well, I'm going to do that after this one because we'll see what happens. Maybe maybe I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, but yes, I have upset people at one point in my life, and it was quite frightening. And so whatever, I'm not gonna, certainly will never go into that story. But anyway, we are about 7 minutes away, and this is 123, Dr. John Stamey, and I want to thank my two co-hosts. Devin is on special assignment. I want to say, ladies first, thank you so much, Robin, for being with us. It's always
a
pleasure. You're
welcome. Thank you for having me. I love working with you and Tony. You guys are my guys.
Tony,
you're so much.
You're great. And so, as usual, I will do the call around when we're done to make sure everyone's still going to be here next week. I always say, see, it's not like, are you mad at me? I don't care if you're mad at me or not. I just want to make sure you're coming back.
Oh, absolutely.
So, ladies and gentlemen, 123, it's only murder, 123. And this is like not the show you expected. This is not your grandmother's murder podcast, but it's what it is, and we enjoy it. And I am working on a research project, and I'll tell everybody in about 2 weeks because I've got something I'm working on. So I'll fill y'all in. So until next week, next Monday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, powered by Blog Talk Radio. Glad to have everybody listening. Rare co-host, I'll share. Love you. It's Murder 1-3. Cheers. Good.
Take care.
Good night, everybody.
Bye. Bye, Tony.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you guys.